Welcome to Raising Connections. I'm your host, Raishan Mayer. This is the program where we talk about our critters, our companions, our commerce, and agriculture, and all the connections between them. As always, we have a fun and interesting guest, and today I'm sitting in the guest's home outside of her home. Welcome. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Amanda Venable, and I'm at Rosehill Manor, and we're sitting in the parlor of the manor house.
I love it. We're sitting on the rug. The room is large. The colors in the room are right, and not too many people know that this place exists. Mm-hmm. What is Rosehill Manor?
Yeah, so Rosehill Manor is a historic home, kind of a house museum. But what makes it unique is it's a children's museum at heart. It was created in the 1970s to be a hands-on museum where kids could learn about history. And we've taken that mission and expanded it across buildings and exhibits and also ages so that it's the perfect place for 2-year-olds to 100-year-olds.
So there's one thing that confuses me slightly. Mm-hmm. This location was a personal house. We are actually sitting in a parlor that was made for a family prominent in the Frederick area, but it is now part of the park and recreation.
Yes.
Can you make the connection for me how something goes from a personal house to the park and rec division?
Sure. So its claim to fame is that it was, we call it the retirement home of Governor Thomas Johnson, who was the first elected governor of Maryland in 1777. And over the next 200 years, it passed through about 4 or 5 families over time that had it as their primary residence or sometimes even a summer residence all the way into the 1960s. And the last family that lived here, they sold it to the county and it actually became the first county park. So of all of our parks in Frederick County, Rosehill was the first one. The manor house for a while was a museum on the first floor and offices on the other floors for parks and recreation. And then as the division grew, they were able to have offices outside, and then the museum took over not only the manor house, but the whole property and added exhibit buildings.
How big is the property?
Yeah, so it's 40 acres right now, about 42 acres. It was originally in the 1810s all the way up to 600 acres. And so we're located in Frederick, right in the city limits. You wouldn't have known that in the 1800s. It would have felt like you were in the country. Today we're in the city limits. And the property originally went all the way into town almost and across Route 15. And now it's 40 acres of that original 600.
Okay, so it's still quite substantial.
It is, yeah.
It's quite substantial. The area itself keeps changing. Mm-hmm. When I first came to this area 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the Coca-Cola bottling plant was right out front.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's breweries and there's educational facilities. The Thomas Johnson High School is right near. It's mm-hmm. right across the way. When you turn in, you're sharing the driveway.
Yes. The land that the whole high school sits on was a part of the original farmstead for Rosehill, as was the Coca-Cola plant at one point. They, I believe in the 40s, sold that portion off. And then in the 60s, when the county purchased this section, part of it was sold, more than the 40 original acres, part of it was sold to build Route 15 and some of the medical plazas on the other side of Route 15. And some of it was given to the school system to build the high school.
What a rich history.
Yes.
Literally a rich history. So what is Rosehill Manor's exact mission?
Yes. So our mission is to interpret all of the people that lived and worked at Rosehill Manor from 1740 until 1940 in a hands-on environment, including interpreting the transportation history with our carriage museum and our agricultural history of Frederick County with our exhibit barns.
1740 to 1940. Mm-hmm. That's 200 years.
Yes.
You know, in European time, that's very little. In American time, that's a whole lot.
Yes, yes.
And the transportation history is substantial. Does it involve the river works and the water works? Frederick has a canal system.
Yes, and so Thomas Johnson, one of the things that we interpret here is that he worked with George Washington on trying to make the Potomac navigable, and they spent a lot of letters writing back and forth and decades of time even before the Revolution, and then they paused during the Revolution and came back to it at the beginning of, you know, the American government system, trying to get Virginia and Maryland to get along enough to decide who was going to pay for what and how to get goods from the western parts of the Ohio River Valley, western Maryland, western Virginia, which now would be West Virginia, all the way into the shipping ports in, of Baltimore, D.C.
Some things never change.
Right, yes.
In 200 years, some things never change. It's amazing how that happens. When was Rose Hill Manor built?
Yeah, so we don't have an exact date, but we estimate around 1792 based on some of the architectural studies of the house and some primary sources. Governor Johnson purchased the property in 1788 from a German family that lived in a log cabin, which is not on the property anymore. We have a, I don't want to say replica because it's an 1850s cabin, but it was moved from another site to Rose Hill. And he gave the property to his daughter when she got married to John Graham, and they had the house built most likely in 1792. We know that by 1795, they're living here.
So local construction, which would mean the materials to build the house and the barns on the 600 acres were either from this ground or sourced locally, we think.
Yes. So Thomas Johnson had several siblings, but he had four brothers that between the five of them, they operated ironworks, glassworks, building window glass. So we think the window glass came from their own construction of their glass houses. They had so much land. They had thousands and thousands of acres of Frederick County land. So the timber would have, if it didn't come from Rose Hill, would have come from the Catoctin Mountains or Sugarloaf Mountain area. These brothers had every aspect of industry at their fingertips. And they had hundreds of enslaved people that between the different properties would have been constructing the bricks, whether it was, out, again, at Rose Hill, making the bricks out in the field or at one of their iron furnaces or other properties and transporting them here and building the property.
That makes sense. In Maryland, we are south of the Mason-Dixon
line. We are, yeah.
Lots of history. The transportation, since the items were local here, the transportation would have been done locally, so probably not the waterways. What sort of transportation would have been used that's featured here at the museum?
Yeah, so we have about 25 historic carriages that range in span from the early or mid 18th century all the way till the 1920s. And we like to show some of those have even the orange taping on the back where they were riding on the roads with cars at the same time. So some of those features that help make sure cars don't run into the carriages existed on those carriages. We like to say that we have a carriage for every need from birth to death because we have gigs that were used by the doctors to go around and make house calls.
Okay, wait a minute. Gigs. Explain a gig.
So those are kind of, you would think of them more like a buggy type of carriage. They're lightweight. They usually have one seat. They might have two seats. They're black, most often black, and they're quick. So if you were a doctor or a lawyer, a professional that wanted to do house calls or move quickly around with one horse pulling them, usually you could kind of make your house calls in a quick manner.
In a gig.
Yes.
Okay. Because in modern times, a gig means a performance or picking up something so quick that you would pick up. So interesting transfer of words.
Yes. Yes. And that quickness is literally the key to those buggies. So a lot of times people call them buggies, which is more of a generic term for many different types.
Got it. So I got us derailed. So you've got gigs. And then what else would have been?
And then we have everything from some that are almost like school buses or downtown buses, but they're carriages. All the way to, we have our local hearse from the Gladhill family in Middletown. And so that's where we get our, from birth to death, every carriage you would need. We have wagons that they would have transported goods in. So we interpret all of those pieces of what daily life was like when you had to use a carriage, whether it's how long it took to go from city to city or place to place, and what that meant. We have a few sources that talk about how the enslaved from different properties were moved in the wagons to go from the glass house to another property. And John Graham specifically was very, in the 1810s, was very integral in building the, helping build some of the parts of the National Road, which today we know as Route 144 and 40, and then Route 144 through like the Newmarket area. And he was on the board of directors for what was called Jug Bridge, which crossed the Monocacy at the kind of that Newmarket, Imesville area into Frederick. So one of his main reasons for doing that was that he was a farmer and he was the president of the bank, and moving grain from the western counties into Baltimore to be sold was very profitable, and having good roadways to do that as quickly as possible and make sure that they didn't get stopped was very important to them.
Just a fun fact that really fits here, the Raising Connections studio is located on 144 in Lisbon. and it is in the Toll House building for Route 144, where they collected the tolls for the National Road.
So you know the carriages came in wagons of grain from Rose Hill, probably passed right in there and stopped right at that building.
And one of the fun facts there, for a long time, that building had a blacksmith that was rented, because if they were paying the toll and you had a flat tire of the day and you need some blacksmith work for shoeing done, there they were.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the commerce never changes. It just keeps going, and it reflects the times that we're in.
Yep.
Was this part of Frederick considered the West?
It was, especially when the German family, the Hoffmans, was living here in the 1740s. This was the frontier, basically, of the time. More and more people, just like we see across all of American history, continue then to expand as farmland is being utilized, searching for more land, more resources. I think one thing that people don't realize is how much timber we used early on. And so constantly finding the land to utilize the timber for whether it's fuel, building, construction, ship building, any of those pieces was more important even than the farming land, was the timber. And so out here in Frederick, it was for a very long time kind of that Western piece until settlers start following.
So in that same vein, oftentimes the more urban areas offered more services. Where in your more rural areas, there were more handcrafts that were done. And many of the displays and many of the hands-on and many of the summer camps involve those handcrafts. When we come back, let's talk about those in the rich history.
Perfect.
Join me, Raishan Mayer, from Mariah Bell Manor Kennel, for our new adventure, Living Life Tails Up podcast, combining everyday life with what goes on at the kennel and farm, a bit of humor, some ideas, and some positive happy bubbles. We're living tails up, nose down, and staying on track. We hope to see you on Living Life Tails Up for 5 to 10 minutes worth of happy, happy bubbles shooting out there in the atmosphere. See you soon.